Welcome back to the Psychovertical Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. As usual, I need to apologise for not having done a podcast for many months. I've just got my next round of Peter Thiel funding through, so I can now do some more podcasting. The reason I'm getting off my arse and doing a doing a podcast is I have like loads of emails with people asking questions and things, and I kind of ignore them. But one of them is actually time sensitive because it's someone who's leaving on an expedition tomorrow on the 13th. So I decided I didn't want to be too slack. You know, like what if I didn't say something and something terrible happened, I could never live with myself, all that kind of stuff. So I decided to do a podcast and reply to this question, and then maybe I'll get back into the groove of doing some more podcasts. What have I got any news I should fill you in? I do have some news, but I can't fill you in on that news. Yes, I'm transitioning. I wonder if life is like I was looking at someone on Instagram. I've kind of gone back to Instagram a little bit, but it's just it's only a small amount. Someone who just got pretty bad frostbite climbing in Alaska, and they were all kind of, you know, stressing about it as you would, having bad frostbite in her toes, being my usual, you know, positive self, I sort of made a comment that like all life is about change management, and you'll just adapt as you always do in life to whatever life brings you. You know, if you've got like, you know, got less toes, you'll have to do something. Like Ryan Messner lost like lots of his toes, and he was grand with it. So drama queen. What's that got to do with this? And anything else happening? I went over to the lakes recently. It was terrible. I had a terrible trip to the lakes. And Noah got like sickness and vomiting thing. And then I got it, and Vanessa got it, and all that kind of stuff. So that was, and the weather was crap, and it was a tree fell on the place we were staying in, and it was terrible. I think I just can't wait to. I always just can't wait to get home these days. I'm turning into one of these like really reclusive people. I went to the Best of Banff yesterday. It wasn't really the Best of Banff. It was just like the Banff on tour, World on tour. And had some good stuff in it. It had a very good film about, I don't know if anybody's seen it, that film about Action Direct, that French woman doing Action Direct. I thought that was really good. And I quite liked the fact that this woman was in the French climbing team, and they wanted her to like dedicate all her time to the you know, being in the Olympics and stuff, and she was like a fuck that, and she went off and just tried to do Action Direct instead, and tried for like over years and years and years. And I'll tell you what happens at the end. But anyway, so it was I thought that was quite good. It's quite good when people kind of turn their backs on things that make, you know, sense, and do things which don't make any sense at all. And yeah, I think that's good. I think maybe when you do the right thing all your life, is you probably get to a point in your life where you realize you did the wrong thing all your life, but you didn't realize it until it's too late. So yeah. So my son is still here. My other son, my second grade son, is my original. It's good to have loads of kids, because then you can sort of work through all your shit dad stuff. And just work it out. I did a post on Instagram. I don't go on Instagram very often, but I did do a post on Instagram. I don't know why. I think the reason I've gone back to Instagram is I need some kind of creative outlet, because I don't do anything that's creative anymore. I just write. Like I'm writing a book now about top rope soloing. On the Line, it's called. And the reason is that if you do a Google search for top rope soloing or Petzl shunts, whatever, you generally somehow get to my website, and I seem to become like someone who seems to know what I'm talking about, even though everything I've written is probably not correct. So So I started updating Me, Myself, and I, the book about rope soloing, and I think there's like about there's like a paragraph about top rope soloing in there, about training for like big wall soloing. And I started like rewriting that, and then I was like, but before I knew it, I'd written like, you know, like 30,000 words on this one thing. So yeah, so I've decided to just focus on that, get that done, because a lot of people seem to be top rope soloing these days, and try and sort of get all the current thinking and stuff into some form of stuff people can read, and bang that out. So but that's a long drawn out process doing that. So like nothing. I think it's just me. I think I'm just not cut out to do anything complicated, because it just takes. I spent like all morning just working out what like the European, you know, the EN 573 regulation for, you know, rope something devices is. And God, it's like, I don't know why I can't just, I'm reading this book about sea kayaking, and it's just, you know, where this guy has basically got like one line about, say, like a drag, you know, drag thing you throw at the back of your kayak, stop your kayak. I would probably end up writing a whole chapter about it, and I don't even know what it is. Do you know what I mean? It's a problem. Like, although it's good if you're like a book like Down, like when I look at it now, I'm like, that could actually be twice as long if I'd actually put more effort into it. But it is a bit disturbing how much detail you can go into. But I think maybe it's a real male thing. Like, men really like real kind of detail stuff, like really go, you know, like I might get into like making steam railways or something, you know, toy steam railways, because that's the kind of thing, like, oh, what kind of brass piping are you using there, what kind of is it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, but yeah, so I'm doing all this kind of god-awful boring shite about stuff, metal stuff, and trying to, you know, trying to come up ways of describing it that's not confusing. But I'm not doing anything creative at all. Like, this is kind of creative, but I'm not doing this either. So yeah, not doing anything creative. Maybe I have to take up watercolors, and I can just kill myself. So going on Instagram is my attempt to be a little bit more creative, but literally I only ever write like two words, so it's not that creative. But I had a picture of, it looked like a child who'd been hit. It's actually my second class son, Ewan, when he was a kid, and he hadn't been hit. But it said it was that. It's like a good question, like a good sort of, what's it called, it thought. Thought bollock or something. What would you call it? Anyway, you know, like we're not allowed to hit our children anymore, you know, unfortunately, but we are allowed to give them drugs. So if your child is like unruly and uncontrollable, you're no longer allowed to, you know, give them a little whack with a ski pole like you used to in the, you know, a few years ago. But you can give them amphetamines. I've only had amphetamines once. Anyway, so it affected my brain. So I just wrote something like that down, and that's probably one of my making comments like that, like making little comments, can get you into a lot of trouble. Like that's one reason why people think I'm Islamophobic. I am, but people think I'm Islamophobic, and. As long as don't like come near me. No, I'm not. I actually quite like religious people, because you know what they. At least you know what they think. But I made that comment about why is, you know, it's very common. It's a very common like little thing to say, but it's like, why is every time one person, you know, one American guy shoots lots of people with a gun, then everyone who's got a gun is to blame, and you have to take the guns off them. But when it's a Islamic terrorist, you know, it's just that one individual, like the religion hasn't got anything to do with it. So it's not really making any, you know, it's just like, it's just an interesting observation, probably not very interesting. But anyway, it sort of signaled me out as being Islamophobic. So, but seeing as I am, it doesn't really matter, does it? But I'm probably less Islamophobic than, and you know, like, anti-theist than I used to be. I used to like just hate all religions, so but now much more, you know, much more, you know, less judgmental about these things. So what's that got to do with what I was talking about? Twitter, Instagram. Oh yeah, so Instagram. That's why I'm back on Instagram. I think my Instagram is like Andy K climbing something. Like my daughter did it for me, like a really old person. So yeah. But yeah, I'm trying to keep off between, you know, if I just have to get rid of there's some certain things you have to get rid of in your life in order to have more time to do useful stuff. And if you're not willing to get rid of pornography, then something else has to give. So so climbing basically. So yeah, any other news? I've not been doing anything, not been going anywhere. I don't think I've got any news whatsoever. I think I must have some news, but I can't think what it is. So the question was from John, who I'm thinking he is probably from England Shire, because he's you know, someone I know in Otley. So it's I'll read it out and then we'll go into it. So, hi Andy, I wondered if you might give us that's a classic Northern, the way of saying it. Us. But someone was asking me about this the other day about how people often write how they speak. Oh, it's me, whiz, we are, whiz, where, oh, what is it? Anyway, there's some weird thing, weird sort of Yorkshire-isms. Anyway, I wondered if you might give us some top tips for our, I'll read it in the proper accent probably. I was wondering if you might give us some top tips for our 3-man trip to climb Denali, leaving 13th of May. We have not done an expedition before, being far more used to alpine-style mountaineering, and it is blowing our minds thinking through all the pros and cons of clothing, food, and cooking, and keeping warm, as well as the crevasses and high alt risks. That's not alt as in alt-right, that's in alt as in high altitude. A few things we are worried about are, number one, how do we protect against sweat wetting our clothing and not being able to dry it out? Number two, what food would you take on such a trip? All dehydrated? ? Number three, any thought on clothing combos? Where to cope with the huge range of weather and how to make sure we protect our sends against frostbite? Any other tips, welcome. We have researched, but your first-hand experience would be really helpful. Love your blog, by the way. Thanks, John. So I do apologise, John. You might be like some kind of, you might be from Essex or somewhere, and you're highly offended about my accent. So let's think. I'll try and answer the questions to begin with. Number one, how do you protect against sweat wetting out our clothing and not being able to dry it out? On an expedition to Denali, or most any expedition where you're in a tent, generally it's actually quite easy to dry things out, because ideally nothing's going to get really wet. Like on Denali you might get really wet low down. Hopefully it's not going to rain. But it might rain, but hopefully it's not going to rain. But you might have like sort of wet snow if you like that rolling around in it. You generally would get wet mostly if you were doing a lot of digging. So if you're digging a snow hole, or you're digging a pit for your tent, or a trench, or a wall, or whatever, then the particles of, well, when you're digging outside, if you're not digging a hole, the particles of snow are in the atmosphere, you know, in the air, and they land on your clothing, and your clothing is warm and it'll start wetting out. So the classic advice is, if you're gonna start digging a snow hole, and I would recommend, John, to really get good digging holes, digging in general. Like, if you're, by the sound of your accent, you're probably like a bin man or something, or a street cleaner. So I would, you know, but digging, there's a lot of digging involved. So if you're gonna do, if you're gonna get, you're gonna start digging or do anything, you know, hard work, you either want to not be wearing any clothes at all, ideally, because you're gonna get quite hot. But that's probably not going to go well on Denali. So you generally, this is all well known. You tend to strip down to as few clothes as you can, put your waterproofs on, and kind of get to it. So, because you don't want to get sweaty, and you don't want to get your, you know, whatever you got on underneath wet. It doesn't really matter, because what you got underneath is going to get damp because it's sweaty, and what got's on top is going to get damp. So You just don't want to be wearing a down jacket, you know, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But the actual drying your clothing, like, some things that get really wet. So the things that are going to get the most wet are probably your socks, number one. Your base layer from sweat, and your gloves, and maybe things like your, you know, like anything that goes around your face, or like a balaclava, buff, whatever. Now, luckily, nearly all those things dry very quickly. You don't want to get into your sleeping bag. Like, the primary area probably going to dry things which aren't soaking wet is going to be in your sleeping bag. So if things are a little bit damp, you're going to get into the tent. You're going to put some warm clothes on, like, say, your duvet jacket. Maybe you'll have some sort of puff pants type of things, or some warm trousers or whatever. And that moisture in your, you know, you're going to be warmer inside the tent. The stove's going to be on. The temperature's going to get quite warm in a tent, even in the you know, when it's super cold outside, the temperature will really heat up. And any moisture in your clothing that's not saturated is just going to transfer out into your other clothing, and the density of the other clothing so high that it doesn't really matter on that kind of thing, because it's not going to be a big problem. Like, every things are going to be drying all the time, like when you're inside the tent. You can dry things, you'll find that, as long as you've got like pretty good base layer kind of clothing, it's not crap, you're going to be, you know, things are going to be getting damp, drying, like all the time. And the only place where that is a problem is probably in your underwear, as in your around your bollocks and stuff. It doesn't seem to be so much of a problem with women, but with men it's that you will get like salt crystals building up inside your clothing, which can rub, so you can get rubbage like underneath your armpits, between your legs, between your thighs. So having spare underwear, you know, lots of spare underwear, and having underwear that's you don't want to get too hot. You don't want to be sweating too much, basically. So when you're moving, you want to be like stripping down, and you want to have clothing you can put on very, very quickly over the top of everything else, because you just have to reduce the sweating as much as you can, but you can't eliminate it. You're always going to be dealing with sweat, and the sweat is not so much of a problem as long as it's not really, really bad. But the main thing for me over a long period would be the build-up of ice, the build-up of salt, which would make your clothing more abrasive against your skin. Now, if you like end up like getting rub red raw between your legs or under your armpits, or, you know, where your rucksack is like rubbing on your small of your back or whatever, that's going to be like extremely painful, and it's going to make a, you know, it's gonna really spoil the enjoyment. So I would, if you got plenty of fuel and stuff, I would really focus on having something to deal with that. And often if you use like a barrier cream, so you get like Glide or like Vaseline, doesn't work great. Get some bag balm. Get some bag balm when you're in Alaska. You'll get it from the chemist. A little tin of bag balm. That's pretty good. It's for like cows' udders. If you see any cows, you can make their day. So, but that's kind of anything that's kind of a jelly kind of thing. I'd also take some like Sudocrem. Sudocrem is very, very useful. Like a little thing of Sudocrem. Like I'm not talking like a giant like liter of it, but like take some Sudocrem, and also the ibuprofen gel is actually quite good as well. If you get the odd tweaky thing, that is kind of useful for that. But anyway, I'd focus more on the rubbing and abrasion and skin damage from moving rather than like frostbite and all that kind of stuff. Like you really shouldn't be getting frostbite on Denali. Like you really shouldn't be getting frostbite on Denali. Like it's not the 1960s. Like you've got really good gear. You just have to not fuck up. And if you've not done anything like this before, if you've not been to this kind of mountain before, the number one thing to realize is like you're not in Scotland and you're not in the Alps. So if you're in the Alps, even in the winter time, you might be coming off a route or going to route, and it's like really, really windy and it's cold, and you're kind of a bit cold, but you're okay. And coming down off Scotland, it might be like 60 mile an hour winds, and you're getting battered around, and but you're going to be at the car soon. It doesn't really matter. Like on Alaska, as you get higher up there, you've got you're always going to be tireder. You might feel stronger as you get higher because of the altitude. The altitude makes you feel stronger. Didn't know that, did you? No, but you will be getting stronger as you're going up, as long as you're eating well and you're sleeping well and everything else, and you're taking your time slowly. The altitude is going to affect you when you get above it depends how fast you go, but if you get to, is it camp 5 the last camp, you're probably going to feel it up there, but you are like a lot higher, and it is colder than it seems. So where you would take your glove off in Scotland ice climbing in the Alps and something, and you'd be like, be doing your boots up or whatever, and you put them back on again. Like on Denali, there's more of a chance that you might get frostbite, and also, you have to take a lot more care about your face. Getting frostbite on your cheeks, on your nose, your ears, all that kind of stuff. So, anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. Take stuff for abrasion, and also take stuff to deal with abrasion. And if you start feeling something's going on, if you're walking along the glacier on day one, and you start feeling like you've got a sweaty ass or something, and you start feeling that there's something rubbing. It's like if you're doing like a half marathon, and you start feeling like the seam in your shorts is rubbing, then yeah, it's not going to be too bad, because by the time you finish and you get home and have a shower, it's over. But if you start feeling like that on day one of like a 4-week trip, then it's gonna be difficult for that to heal properly. You're gonna have to start covering it up and everything else. So so try and think more of you doing something that's athletic, less mountaineering, if you know what I mean. So anything that's wet is probably going to dry in your tent or when you're wearing it. If you get the stove on, if you take plenty of fuel, this is voiding the warranty, by the way, like this is not what people recommend. You can run your stove inside your tent without a pan on it, and it'll be fine. You're not going to die of anything. You can leave, give yourself some ventilation, but you can actually create like a lot of heat, like inside your tent. You could have it in the porch, but if you really want to get like a real kind of heat going, you want to get it inside your tent if you've got a big tent. And obviously take precautions. Don't burn yourself. Don't set the tent on fire. You know, get the stove going so it's stable, then bring it into the tent, put it on the tent, but on a wooden board and all that kind of stuff, and you'll actually generate like a huge amount of heat, which was actually dry stuff. You can stick all your socks in the I've lots of lines in your tent for socks and everything else to sort of dry out, but only hang stuff up when it's actually warm in the tent. You know, as soon as you've got rid of some of the moisture, I'd always, when you go to sleep, you want to kind of put them in your sleeping bag. Now, I know you know this is again, people say not to do this, but because you're in a tent and you've got a very warm sleeping bag, and there's kind of moisture in there's always heat in the tent of everybody else, then it's not such a big issue really. Your sleeping bag is constantly going to be drying out. The only time you're probably going to struggle is when you're like at high altitude. So going up to 14,000 feet up to Camp 4, you know, don't really worry about it. When you get Camp 4, it'd be like being on a you know, Mediterranean beach or something. But it's only when you get higher, that's when you have to be a lot more careful. But when you get higher, there's less chance of things being wet because you're higher and also you know what you're doing. But the number one thing not to get wet are your socks. If you start the day with wet socks, unless you've got, no matter what boots you've got, you are running a risk. Well, you're definitely going to have a shit day, but also you're running the risk of, a frostbite or some kind of like skin damage. So it's unacceptable to start the day with wet socks. And everyone, like if your mate has got wet socks, then that's on you as well. Like you're a team, so everyone has to start the day with wet socks. Now everyone has to start the day with dry socks, and everyone has to start the day with dry gloves and dry mitts, and basically, you know, like you. So, and if someone says like, "Oh, I forgot to dry my socks. I left my socks out last because I'm so tired. I got in, I just threw my socks, and they're all frozen at the end of my sleeping bag." Instead of saying, "You wanker, you know, you're gonna have cold feet now," and then worrying about it all the rest of the day. How are your feet? Just give them your dry socks and then, you know, sort it out later on, which is kind of a bit nasty. But, you know, but it really is like if someone, a problem inside your tent is solvable. A problem when you're like halfway up some like 1,000 feet of fixed ropes is like everyone's problem. So if there are people in your team who aren't experienced, so it's like probably like being in the army. I've never been in the army, but it's like a lot of these things, the army, kayak, you know, a lot, expedition kayaking, all that kind of stuff. It's all about keeping your shit together. There's not a lot to do, but if you start getting lazy or you're so knackered that you can't, you know, do stuff, then that's when like things go wrong. So it's on you to, you know, you've got to be like Shackleton. Like someone's got to, the one who's the most capable and is less tired than everybody else has to keep an eye on everybody else and like, "Oh, look, I'll put your, you know, put that in here," and whatever. Like other ways to dry stuff is, it's always nice to fill up a Nalgene bottle with boiling water and put that in your sleeping bag. So that's going to, because you probably have a lot more fuel than you actually need, and you're probably going to be able to get a lot of fuel off other people who've got too much fuel than they need. So, you know, filling up a Nalgene bottle, it basically boosts the heat inside your sleeping bag straight away. And when that, and then you've got water to drink in the night. Like every time you piss, if on my Substack, Andy Kirkpatrick or whatever, there's a thing on there at the moment about piss bottles, basically. So I would recommend you get like a 1.5 litre piss bottle and mark it up, make sure people know what it is, because bulk's not such a big issue, and like a 1.5 litre piss bottle is kind of better for those kind of expeditions on like tents and stuff. Because there'll be a lot of sitting around drinking tea, and you don't want to have to be pissing all the time. So, and if you're a woman, then pissing into an Nalgene bottle, it's probably a 1.5 litre bottle is probably too big to piss into, because you have to like, anyway. So you're probably better with a 1 litre piss bottle. So, but yes, but it's you're gonna be pissing a lot. And so anyway, so every time you piss in the night, you need to drink some water out of your Nalgene bottle, rather than just waking up really, really dehydrated. But you can also, say you've got some wet kit, you could put the you could wrap it in the Nalgene bottle, and you could wrap it around the Nalgene bottle, or if you don't want to contaminate your sleeping bag, the other thing to do is to lie on top of it underneath your sleeping bag. So you would say you've got like a very damp shell jacket, and you don't want to just leave it out in the porch because it's going to freeze, and maybe you'd be all right if it freezes. If tomorrow the weather's good, it'll dry really, really quickly anyway when you're moving. But if you want to start the day with everything like ship shape, then just lying on it is actually kind of effective, as long as it's not so wet. You know, you can always put something over the top of it. Like if you've got like your carry mat, then a damp piece of damp shell, and then your fleece jacket over the top of it it's weird what kind of works like well in those situations. Basically, fundamentally, on any of these trips, it's the things that are a problem are never the things you think about. It's probably not going to be like falling down a crevasse and hanging there, blah blah blah, all that kind of stuff. It's going to be something something sort of silly or stupid or small, really. So I would try and have a layer, probably a little too late now because you're going tomorrow, but you know, you want like a layering system that is almost more what you would be using if you're going fell running or, you know, like, you know, walking somewhere. And another thing about your clothing is the number one issue you're probably going to have is the heat, not the cold. You're probably going to be in places where the heat is the biggest issue, because you're going to be moving low down the glacier. So the heat, the sun, the light. So you want a system where you basically want every bit of your skin covered up, either for the sun or for the cold and wind when you get higher up. So you always want to be wearing full underwear, and I would also wear stuff on my hands, you know, get some thinny gloves, wear those, and I would also like cover my face, or really good hat with a visor. You want to one with a visor because you might have to wear it under a helmet. You want like those outdoor research kind of hats. You want something coming down the back covering your neck. You want to wear a buff so you can pull it over your face. You want your sunglasses. And like if you like, I really hate putting sun cream on, so I always prefer to cover myself, because sun cream is not that effective. It's only effective a certain amount of time, but it rubs off, it wears off, it's not that good. So like generally, I think, well, you know, when I went to Antarctica, and then when I went to Greenland, you know, that's like 3 months in a really high UV kind of atmosphere. I don't think I ever put any sun cream on, but I was always like covered up. And if you see the damage that it does to people, like, you know, if you get caught on day one in the sun, you know, your lips can be in such a state, and they won't recover till you get down. And it could be so bad that you have to go down. It's like, you know, just like imagine like burning your lips with a candle and then trying to go on like a 4 week holiday. You know, it really is like super, super extreme, like the sun. So be really, really careful. You know, like this, you know, maybe take sun cream. So when you're hanging around at, you know, the camp, you know, one of the camps when you're sort of acclimatizing, you're not like walking around like the mummy. But when you're moving around, just have like a zero tolerance to sun like getting on your skin. It's only when it's cloudy, you're still getting UV rays coming through the cloud, so don't think that's going to protect you. You probably get like a good instinct for when you're okay, but generally, you know, you're going to transition from the sun and the UV to as you get higher, it's going to be the cold and the wind and everything else. So most base layers are going to be fine for keeping out the sun. If it's like Brynja sort of mesh underwear, that's less effective because it's got holes in it. You could even, you know, even low down on the glacier, you might even want to use a cotton over the top, like a cotton t-shirt over the top of a base layer, because that's going to help suck some of the moisture out, and it might help you like cool off a bit. And also creates a little bit of a windproof, well, not windproof, but like a wind stopper-ish kind of layer over the top, a bit like how, you know, fell runners, you know, used to wear like Helly Hansen with like a t-shirt over the top. So yeah, and you know, any bit of, like, your hands are kind of not as, your hands are more robust when it comes to sun, because I've had sun on them all the time. So you don't want to just be like skiing around in your underpants. So yeah, I guess that's it. But if So number two, what food would you take on such a trip, all dehydrated? Now, like, dehydrated food is easy. It's just easy to take, and it's not that expensive. Maybe when we went to Denali, I think we probably had nearly like 2 months' food, and I think it only cost us like 160. You know, the dehydrated food probably cost us like $160, or maybe it wasn't that expensive. For if you imagine like eating out every night for like 2 months, how expensive that would be. It wasn't too bad. The biggest problem with dehydrated food is you haven't tried it before. So if you're a fussy eater, then you know you're gonna be in trouble. So I would get a wide variety of dehydrated food. Now, dehydrated food is like, There's arguments for and against, but you definitely want dehydrated food above 14,000 feet, Camp 4, because it's light. You don't have to think about it. You know, you pour the water in, you leave it for a while. One thing worth getting, like, if you're really anal about it, you can take all the packaging. You can transfer all the dehydrated food into something else, like a plastic bags and whatever. But it's probably not worth it. So just leave it all in the bags, so you know how much water it has, because they're all different. It shows you where the water needs to go to and everything else. One thing worth getting if you've got one is get like a long one of those plastic clippers that you can close the bag with. Even if it's just like one edge of it. So, you know, you cut the bag at a slight angle, so it's not fully open all the way along. Because what you want to do is you want to pour the water in. So the water wants to be boiling hot. Like, make sure it's boiling hot, not like, you know, off hot. Put the water in, squeeze all the air out as much as you can, and then put the clipper on and clip it closed, and then put it inside your clothing. Like, this is when you're high up, when it's very, very cold. Put it inside your clothing. Like, if you just kind of, generally, if you just close the seal, it's got like a seal on all these things. You pour the water in, push the air out, and then like pull this seal thing closed, like a Ziploc thing. But very often you kind of forget it's in there, and you start going to grab something like a Mars bar, and it all like spills out inside your clothing, which isn't great. So that's kind of a handy thing to have. When you're having dehydrated food, the biggest issue is make sure that it's completely mixed. So it's worth taking either a very long spoon, like a long, you know, like camping spoon. So it's, you need to have like a 6-inch handle, like a long handle, or take a chopstick. Just take one chopstick and just like really mix up the corners, because it's really nasty when you get a big mouthful of like just dehydrated food that's not dehydrated. So get a mixture, and realize that as you get higher, your appetite is probably going to decrease. You're probably going to be all right up to a certain height, or ideally you want to be able to keep eating stuff, but as you get to a certain height, you're going to find it harder to eat. So generally you might find that you might only want to have like share one meal between two people, where lower down, where you're doing more effort, you might want to hold one to yourself. And you can also, have those meals for breakfast as well. You know, if you're going to set out on a long day, you know, to the summit, you might be better if you know if there's one dehydrated meal you really really like, you know, and you're not going to puke it up when you eat it, then you might be well just to have one of those for your breakfast, and then, you know, and use that instead. For breakfast, my favorite kind of breakfast is just something that you can eat cold. So I prefer like sort of muesli, harvest crunch, what we call it, all that kind of stuff, rather than porridge or stuff that needs cooking. So you just you just want to pre-mix that portion of breakfast with your milk powder already in there in a bag, and then you just stick it into your bowl or whatever, into your cup, if you can use like one of the old, just clean out one of the old dehydrated food bags, so you can put your cereal in there higher up, so you don't need to take a bowl or anything, you know. So then you just eat it, and it's you can use the water that you put in the sleeping bag in the night before, just use that, and you can eat it in your sleeping bag, so it's still, you know, so you're nice and warm inside your sleeping bag, and that saves a huge amount of time. Like, I would recommend that you have a system where you only use the stove once a day, so you don't put the stove on at all in the morning. And to do that, you need to take maybe like a flask each, like a 1.5-litre flask, you know, like a classic kind of metal flask. And you just, I've covered this on the podcast before, but you basically, in the evening, you just fill up all the flasks, and the flasks go in your sleeping bag, or just, you know, just need to be somewhere, don't have them in the snow, but so you just put them somewhere, and then in the morning, and you fill everybody's water bottles, and everything is, you know, you've got all your water ready. So you wake up in the morning, and you get your, you pour some of the hot water into your mug, and you have your cup of tea, and then you get some water from your bottle, your cold water. I don't like hot water in cereal. You have your cereal, and ideally, when you've had your breakfast, you still have at least 1 or 2 liters of water, depending on how much you drink. Like, don't end up carrying like 2 liters of water every day and only drinking 1 liter and the other liter like freezes. Just work out how much water you feel like you need, which might not be what they recommend. And so that means you basically, you wake up, and within half an hour you can be packing up and leaving. Where if you're waking up and trying to light the stove, prime the stove, you know, all that kind of stuff, you could be there for like 2 or 3 hours. So, and that is the coldest point part of the day, and that's the part of the day when you want to be getting up and moving. You don't want to be setting off too late, and so I'd recommend that. And also you're reducing, like, if you're just reducing the amount of moisture in the air in the tent, really, in the morning. It's just like the way to do it, basically. Like, just use your stove like once a day. Like, if you're having a day when you're like acclimatizing, just sitting around, then you should like just brew up all day long. Like, every 2 hours, make another cup of tea. You know, eat as much food as you can, and really like chill out. But when it's like time to be getting shit done, then don't be using your stove in the morning. Just get up and get going, and have everything. Just have a really good system. When it comes to taking down your tent, like, this is stand as this, build as this. Like, everyone knows exactly what they do. Don't let your tent blow away. You know, when you want to take the poles out, then you want to roll it backwards towards the back of the tent where you've got your skis or your wands or whatever. And then when it's rolled up, then stick it in a bag, like a big bag. Don't carry like a little tiny stupid tent bag. You know, roll it up and put the whole rolled tent like in your pulk. So you just, in the night, you just take it out, stick the stakes in at the back, roll the tent up, put the poles in, you know, so you just don't let your tent blow away, basically. When the tent's up, one person goes in and digs out the a trench at the front of the tent to put your feet into, Then someone else is like bringing in the sleeping bags and the mats from the back of the tent. And just to make sure that everyone is doing something, one person's like sorting out a wall, you know, building a wall. When everything's ready, someone can start boiling water for tea or whatever, and the other three people can be building the wall around the tent. And as you're building the wall, that person could be giving them a drink, hot drink, you know, and just try to, like, if you're often a good thing is to eat something or drink something just before you start doing all the camp stuff. Because if you just get really knackered, you're not going to do a good job. You're going to get in the tent. You didn't build a wall. You know, you the stuff that's not out of the thing, you know, like have lots of, you know, you always want to mark everything. So if everyone's got like a yellow stuff sack and the yellow stuff sack's got like the, you know, the stove in it, and it's also got the first aid kit in it, and it's got all your porno magazines or whatever. Yeah, you know, it's not good. So everything has to be marked, and you know, so, and everyone's got a job, and it's not about being democratic. It's like, you know, this, you're good at digging. You're good at digging holes. You do that. I'll just, you know, I'm good at getting the stove going. I'll get the stove going, and make sure you've got everything you need inside the tent. Make sure you've got enough fuel. Make sure there's nothing you're gonna have to go out and get anything. You know, if you try and have a crap at the same time every day, if you can have a crap, you know, go out in the morning, have a crap. Don't be like halfway through the afternoon, oh, I need to have a crap. So just get into a routine of having a crap. Get your shit cans sorted out so people know where they are. Like, you can have a shit on the inside of the tent in your pit, but it's not recommended if you want to, you know, it's not very pleasant for everybody else. But, you know, if you're roughy toughies, maybe you'll have to do it. But So that's, is there anything else about that kind of thing? Always make sure you've got your shovels inside the tent, not outside the tent. Don't leave anything outside the tent unless you want to lose it, because the snow will come down and you will never find it again. Make sure your pulks are all secured outside, and make sure they're upside down. Make sure you've got stuff on top of them so they can't blow away. The wind, you know, the wind can be fucking horrendous. On any mountain, like, the wind can destroy a house, let alone a tent. So make sure your tent is in good working order. Got a good wall around it. Maybe you want to have a double wall around it if it's really, really bad. Don't allow the tent to get crushed by the snow. Like, set your alarm every 2 hours. Someone has to go out and dig around the tent. Don't destroy the tent by scratching it with a shovel. It's sometimes worth having something. Like, you can get these like plastic, almost like a kiddie kind of not a shovel, it's like a piece of bent plastic, a bit of polycarbonate. Sometimes it's good to have something like that, or even like, say, the back plastic part of out of a rucksack, rather than risk damage, you know, ripping the tent. Like, if you know, if you've got a small piece of dint in your shovel and you scrape it along the side of the tent, you can just rip the tent in half, you know, there's a huge hole in the tent. So carry repair stuff for repairing your tent. We don't want to be repairing your tent in the middle of a storm, so just be really careful. You just have to remove as much, you don't have to remove all the snow off the tent. You can just use your hand to brush it off, but you're mainly trying to remove down, you know, all the snow that's kind of piling up. When you build a wall around your tent, like, make sure you create enough space to walk around the tent easily so you can actually go around digging all the stuff out. And sometimes you might be better with a smaller wall, which will mean that the wind actually blows all the snow off your tent rather than a massive wall that, you know, that dumps all the snow on the other side of the wall where your tent is. So it depends how secure your tent is and where the wind's blowing from. If you've got double poles, single poles, like if it starts getting really dicey, you know, you can always go out and dig some more, you know, dig more of a wall. But, you know, apart from you have to be careful of other tents drifting onto your tent. So I would always keep your tent about, you know, like 20, 30 meters away from anybody else's tent, So that includes if there's a team of you, I would probably, unless you're all in the same wall, you know, build a wall around two tents. You always have to be careful that if you get a big drift on one tent, it's actually drifting onto your tent, which is, you know, a problem. It's probably not going to be. It might happen there. I've seen it happen in like a day, so that's one thing to think about. So non-dehydrated food. Now, someone once told me that only take food on expedition that you would eat at sea level, because if you don't like it at sea level, you're not going to like it on a mountain. So you will find that you always want like a mix of sweet and savoury things. So don't just take chocolate and sweets. You want like, you know, all sorts of like savoury, you know, savoury things as well, like, you know, your nuts and all that kind of shite. But you want like a mixture of those kind of things. You know, like food throughout the day is like important, sort of the, you know, I quite like M&Ms because it's like nuts and it's chocolate, but it's probably not good for you. But you know, if you don't like the muesli bars, you know, and you go on Denali, you're not going to eat them because you just won't eat them. So make sure you got stuff, you know, like salami, cheese, all that kind of stuff that you can eat, you know, throughout the day. So I would probably recommend low down on the mountain, like going up to. Going around to Windy Corner, you've got to carry a fair amount of kit around there. So probably up to Camp 3, is it? I would maybe try and use non-dehydrated food, because it's actually quite easy angled going up to there. It's not a big deal, and you've got your pulk. If you can, you're often better having two pulks that are half full, like connected one behind the other, rather than one pulk that's really full. And you'll find that the pulk behind or the pulk in front will stabilise the pulk connected to it. If you're going over like a bit of sastrugi, the pulk behind will stop the pulk in front from tipping over. And as the back one goes over the sastrugi, the pulk in front will stop the back one from tipping over. And you just connect it with some cord. And if you were skiing down, or if there was a lot of sastrugi, you can sometimes connect them side by side, which can make them kind of more stable. But you've got to, you know, it's more of a furrow to pull it down. So I would, you know, the classic things, pasta romana is the way to go, which is just garlic, olive oil, and some get some chili flakes and some Parmesan cheese. Now that'll probably do you for the whole expedition. So, you know, you cook your pasta, you know, you cook your pasta in your water, and then you make sure it's you know, make sure you got plenty of water in there, and make sure it's boiling. Don't put that pasta in. So you cook your pasta, and then you just want to chop up your garlic, put your garlic in some olive oil, and I guess you could transfer the, anyway, it's a little bit, it depends how you've got to work out a way of doing it that's not messy, because you don't want to be doing too much washing up. But it is, you basically just cook your pasta, you put your ideally you want to fry your garlic and your olive oil, and don't be skimping on the olive oil like fat. People tell you fat's not good at high altitude. Well, you're not that high, so it doesn't really matter. So your fat, your garlic, you probably use fresh garlic, why not? And your chili flakes, you could put some, you put lots of salt. Make sure you put loads and loads of salt in your pasta. Now you want a tablespoon of salt in your pasta, like not on the pasta, but like when you're in the boiling water. So you do all that, and then you basically put your, when you drain it, you put the oil on. And you mix it all together, then you grate shitload of Parmesan cheese on it, and that's it. That's pasta romana, and that is I reckon that is the thing for expeditions. And everyone will be sitting there with their fucking dehydrated, you know, cow shit, whatever it is, what people eat on the mountains, and you'll be there like, hey. So you know, as soon as you're from the north, you might want some dehydrated Yorkshire puddings or something as well. or black pudding. So you know, you can go to town. Like bacon is also really good. You know, eggs, it's kind of, you could hard boil, you know, you could like cook some stuff before you went, but you have got more heat lower down on the mountain, so that's probably not so good. But, you know, bagels are fantastic. I would take shitloads of bagels. I would take butter, but you're going to have to transfer it into something else, like an Nalgene bottle, because it's going to melt. And, you know, things like get sort of those little condiment things, condiment of like tomato sauce or whatever. You know, things like bacon bagels, you know, for breakfast on your days when you're acclimatizing, they are damn good with some cheese on as well. So yeah, so don't, you know, you're on your holidays, like don't make it too grim. And as you're going up, you're going to find that food is, you know, all that heavy kind of food is going, is decreasing as well. So once you get around to, yeah, probably going around, maybe take some of that food with you if you're going around Windy Corner. That's quite a long day going around Windy Corner. If you got you got loads of stuff, like try and keep the weight down on all your stuff. Like don't go crazy with like carrying like loads and loads of stuff. Like try and keep it light as much as you can. Don't take loads of, you know, just take the clothes you're wearing, and then your storm clothes, like as in your duvet jacket and your extra mitts and all that kind of stuff. Like carry some extra mitts. So like a mixture of dehydrated and non-dehydrated food. I always like to take soup, but I never find a tend to eat it. Like I always, you know, I just don't seem to eat it. So I mainly just drink, like biscuits are good. Like, you know, like, look, don't get too bogged down in what is nutritious and stuff. Like, just take what you really like. Like, you know, like nothing better than at the end of the day, you've got your cup of tea and you've got your some chocolate digestives or something. Ginger biscuits are better because they don't break as easily. But you know, you got your biscuits, cup of tea, you got your book. It's a mate. It's like that's what it's all about. Drinking tea and eating your biscuits. So number three, any thoughts on clothing combos? Where to cope with the huge range of weather and how to make sure you protect against frostbite? So I've covered the heat stuff. So basically, it's kind of the same kind of clothing you would wear, you know, on Ben Nevis, that kind of clothing, because you're going to be moving. Like when you're not moving, you're going to be in a tent. Like you're either going to be moving, or you're going to be preparing to move, or preparing to stop, or stopped. So the chances of you going along and going like, oh, I'm so cold, I'm dying of hypothermia, it's probably not going to happen if you have experience of winter mountaineering and everything else. You should know, you know, you're like, I'm not really warm and I'm not really cold, which is like, that's the ideal. If you're like, I'm very sweaty, but I know I'm going to stop soon, I'm not that sweaty, and I think my clothes can deal with it. And if they don't, when I stop, I'll put my duvet jacket on, and I'll be okay. Like, you know that. You don't want to be someone who like sets off in their base layer and they don't put their shell on, and they're kind of, it's in the bag and they can't get it off, and they're going up the fixed ropes and they get really, really cold and they get wet because the base layer gets snow on it and it melts in, and then they get even more wet and they're just wet to their core, and then it suddenly gets so much colder, and before they know it, they can't use their fingers and they can't get the bag open to get their more clothes on. And it just kind of compounds one thing after the other. So keeping out the wind, having clothing that's appropriate for what you're doing. Like it could be like in the Antarctic, you know, often you're wearing just like your base layers with the shell over the top. You don't want to be setting off for much of it, you know, with your big fleece, you know, your big fleecy solar pets and your, you know, all these kind of things. You know, you probably want to be wearing sort of less than that. Like maybe, you know, power stretch kind of stuff is good. It's not too thick. It's stretchy. It sort of copes well with moisture and stuff. People will often wear more kind of soft shelly kind of trousers rather than wearing like mountaineering, rather than wearing shell trousers. But you need to have your shell trousers with you as well, because they're just not effective in a proper storm. They're good when it's you know, sort of cold and dry and mild and the sun's out and things. But you want to, if you're on like a big route on Ben Nevis in the middle of a wintry Scottish storm, you don't want to be in your soft shell trousers. You know, if you thought like, oh, we can get top of this route, we might have to bivvy out, you know, what clothing would you like to have? Like for me, you know, the classic is like for expedition clothing would be like, you know, proper soft shell, like, you know, like buffalo kind of thing, where you haven't got like a hard shell at all. You've just got, you know, something that's stopping the wind and is easy to vent and everything else. So the clothing is more down to your own. But you don't want to be buying. You go in and you say, I want to buy, what's the thickest fleece you've got? You know, you get this like massive heavy fleece, and then you're just like sweating your ass off like all every time you put it on. You know, but really you want to imagine you're doing something very athletic, because you can be carrying like a big heavy rucksack quite a lot of the time. And that's going to keep you warm. And but you want to then have your big, it doesn't have to be that big, but you know, you want your duvet jacket to throw on. And as soon as you stop, put on your duvet jacket. If you've got like, you know, some people wear, you know, like down trousers or whatever, but you're only going to need them for like fanning around like low down if it's cold, and for the summit day. But even then, you're probably not going to need that. It's worth making sure your package, your balls and all that kind of stuff are not too exposed. Like remember the core of your body extends down to your balls basically. So you know, if you could have this like amazing down jacket, but it only goes to your belly button, you know, there's a part of your body that's left out in the cold. So you know, make sure everything is like if your balls and all that kind of stuff and your bits are all, you know, well insulated, then you will probably feel warmer than not. You know, like I'm only saying, like if you're just going along and you've just got your base layer on your bottoms and a shell, then you know you might feel like your dick might fall off if it's like super cold, which is not conducive to what you're doing. Down clothing or whatever, it doesn't have to be like some sort of Himalayan weight clothing. Like you're almost as good to have like a medium, like a lightweight down jacket, and then a medium weight down jacket that you wear over the top of it when you need it. So, you know, like the classic kind of, you know, like, you know, like a prism, like, is it prism? Like a montane prism, not down jacket, but, you know, like some kind of medium lightweight sort of synthetic jacket might be better than just carrying this humongous, like, you know, huge, heavy, like sleeping bag with arms kind of thing. And, but yeah, as I say, it's probably like we were up there, you know, at -50. And we were wearing like synthetic, big thick synthetic solar pets, which were probably like, you know, like an inch thick or whatever, like fiber pile, you know, like synthetic insulation, and then a jacket with the same material that went right down to your thighs, you know, and that's pretty damn cold, but. You know, the biggest concern was always like not getting too hot. It wasn't really about getting cold. Like you shouldn't really be getting too cold unless you get stuck. You know, something happens, you get stuck. So that's why you want to, when you go to the top, you need to have the stuff with you in case you get stuck for some reason. You don't want like one sleeping bag between two people. You need like a, I would probably take a shovel for each person. You want a stove, you want some fuel, some food, and all that kind of stuff. And you need the kit where if something was to happen, you could dig in and you'd be totally fine. You know, you'd come out of it as you went into it, basically. But if you go up there and something goes wrong, like Nigel Vardy, I don't know if anyone's met Nigel Vardy, but he's got like no nose, no fingers, no toes. So you know, something went wrong on Denali for him, and that's what happened. So you want the, and also you don't know, you might have all your shit together, and you might come across someone who didn't, and you might need to have to help them. So it's a good thing. And like route finding on Denali, it's like you're basically following like a big track most of the way. Even in the winter time, you could sort of work out where people had been. But you still need to don't be complacent. Like if you're carrying a GPS and things, like learn how to use it. It's quite hard to get a good map of Denali for some reason. But try and have it all sorted out. Like a good thing to get is to go on Google Images or Google Earth and screen grab all the images of the Denali you can see the route going up it. You can see all the people and the camps and stuff, and that's kind of a handy thing to have. You can sort of identify where things are. And in terms of like dying on it, the one place is When you get to top of Motorcycle Hill, is it called Squirrel Hill or something? There's a bit that goes up from the top of Motorcycle Hill up to Squirrel Point or something, some kind of beaver point or something. And it's kind of, when we were there, it was very icy. And if you were to fall, you would fall right down the other side, which would not be good. So that was the only bit you have to be a little bit careful on the ridge. Like the fixed ropes are fine. The fixed ropes could be a complete nightmare if you didn't know what you're doing. But hopefully you know what you're doing with the Jumars or whatever. Like, make sure whatever you've got that it's you know how to use it basically, and you can get it on and off without taking your. And if you can take your gloves off, make sure your mitts are all attached to you in somehow so you can't drop them. But you know, if you haven't got your shit together, that could be a bit of a nightmare going up there. But it's kind of fine. You just have to, you know, have a good, you know what you're doing. And so the fixed ropes are fine. The ridge is fine. It's just like a ridge. Like if you're roped up with somebody, there are buried stakes with you can clip into with. So take some lightweight, you know, sort of carabiners and stuff for clipping into. As you move it, just move along together. Make sure your crampons, you make sure you feel very confident on your feet with your crampons. Probably take like one ice axe and one ski pole for going along the ridge or something. Like a long ice axe, that is really handy if you're doing the West Buttress. So yeah, that's the only bit I thought was a bit spicy was going up to Squirrel Point. And there are like crevasses pretty much everywhere, so you know, don't be complacent when you try and stay within the boundaries of where you've checked for no crevasses. Don't go off wandering around. Make sure everything that goes on your pulk, on the outside of your pulk, if you've got like ideally you want a bag to put everything inside. But make sure anything on the outside of your pulk is connected to the pulk. Like don't just trust straps or bungee cord or whatever. Like make sure it's like physically clipped into something else, because then it's very easy to lose stuff off the top of a pulk. Like your pulk flips upside down, you keep dragging it along because you're so sick of it, and your tent, you know, pulls off the top and rolls down and stuff like that. So make sure everything is connected to everything else when you're using your pulk. Your pulks are kind of, I would definitely bring my pulk all the way up to 14,000 feet because it's just like kind of handy. It doesn't weigh very much. It's kind of handy. Just take one pulk, stick your stuff on it. I guess that might be it. I think for my advice. And yeah, just don't forget, you know, your face. Look after your face, your hands, your feet. But your face, definitely get some, you know, good. Get some good goggles. If you're going to wear your goggles, don't be taking them on and off all the time. I ideally put them on in the tent, or you know, put them on. Is it hot to cold? If you take something from the cold to the hot, that's when you get condensation. So if you've got things like your camera and all that kind of stuff, that's where you're going to get condensation on it when you bring it into the tent. So it's good to have like a Ziploc, you know, Ziploc bag. Put any electronics like in there. Don't switch any electronics on. If this is when you're higher up and it's super cold, you know, don't switch anything on until it's you think it's you know, it's not too cold, because otherwise you might get condensation on it, and it might destroy it. So you know, put your camera, your phone, whatever, in a Ziploc bag, and then stick it inside your sleeping bag, and then don't switch it on until everything's warmed up. Your goggles, so put them on. Like if you're going outside and it's stormy, put your goggles on and don't take them on and off. Every time you take your goggles off, snow's going to get in there, and then it's going to dampen them out, and then they're going to get foggy, and it's a nightmare. So, you know, try and leave your goggles on all the time. If you look at like snowboarders, they always just leave the goggles on all the time. They're not like sticking on the helmet and whatever. They just leave them on. Lower down, you just use sunglasses. Those like plastic things that go over your nose, attach your sunglasses. They're very, very good idea. Tape that goes on your skin is kind of, you know, some sort of finger tape, Strapel kind of tape. It's kind of can be useful as well if you get any skin damage on your skin. And skis are highly recommended. I would say low down, even if you can't ski, they're really good up to camp 3. Skis are really handy. Going down with skis, if you can't ski, just wrap some cord around the skis so they don't slide downhill. They just like kind of like, and when you're going uphill with skins on, they're like super duper snowshoes. You'll go like way faster than the snowshoes, use a lot less energy, be safer because of crevasses and things, and they're excellent. And then coming downhill, they're kind of like super fast snowshoes. You can like shoosh along, and you shouldn't be like flying off down there. And they're kind of very handy if you can ski. Fuel, you're probably going to use white gas. You buy that from the person. Don't take too much fuel. I can't remember how much fuel you use. Like we had like a windshield in our stove, which was a bit like a Tranger. So we had like a Whisperlite stove. Like Whisperlites are great for everything, because they're quieter than an XGK. So Whisperlite, and it was basically like a Tranger, but it was actually just made out of aluminium. Was it aluminium? It's basically like off eBay, like a very, very thin piece, a sheet of aluminium, I think. And I just cut it, and it folded around. It had a hole in the bottom for the pipe for the stove. And then it basically, the pan would just sit about 5 centimeters. 5 centimeters? Maybe that's too much. 1 centimeter. Anyway, it sat a little bit above where it should do on the stove. And that just meant that it combusted all the carbon monoxide in the stove, which is very handy if you have to cook inside your tent in a storm. So as soon as you put a pan on the stove, that's when you start getting the carbon monoxide. And if you have like a reactor kind of stove, like a jet boil kind of stove, like the carbon monoxide is going to be off the dioxide, whatever it is, the one that kills you. It's going to be off the charts. So as soon as you use any stove and you put the pan on it, that's when you need like good ventilation. But when there's nothing on it, you don't need to worry about it unless you elevate it. And if you've got any like days when you're not doing anything, low down, some rest days, I would practice building a survival trench. You know, that's a good thing to practice, digging a snow hole, just kind of practice the stuff that could save you higher up on the mountain. Practice building an igloo. That's a good thing to, you need like a good snow saw. Just have fun. I guess that's all I'm saying. Have fun. And it's a great experience, and you'll have a great time. You'll come back and you'll be like, "Ee, by gum, that was a grand day out." So yeah. And I don't know what your chances are of getting to the top. Like, the chances of getting many of the things are going to be about down to things out of your control, like the weather. Like, you can't force it, basically. If the weather's not playing, you can't force it. But just don't fail because of things that were in your control, or don't kill yourself because of things that were in your control. So just be, just play a long game, take it slowly, don't rush. The beginning of the trip, go much slower than you want to, because you've got a lot of stuff to work out. You've got team dynamics, you've got kit dynamics. So just go a bit slower at the beginning. Like, if you get bad blisters and horrendous sunburnt lips on day one, it's over. So just take it slowly, and just, speed up as you get, speed up at the point where you have to slow down. And have a take lots of photographs, and tell us how you got on. So, okay, that'll be it for now. I've got some other questions for another time, but that's me talking for too long. And until next time, that's me signing out. Goodbye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.